You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. The show is brought to you in partnership with Progressive Masculinity and headteacherchat.com. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the We Lead Well podcast. I'm Vicky Maguire. I'm an education and leadership coach. I work with school leaders to support them to improve their own well-being and that of all of their staff. And I do this in a number of ways, from doing head teacher and senior leadership one-to-one coaching. I deliver team coaching for senior leadership teams and do leadership training via the Resilient Leaders Elements. And I also run group coaching programs for women leaders, and I've created the Women Lead Well Coaching Network to provide a supportive network for female school leaders. Basically, it's a shared space where women in education come together to support each other and champion each other. It's a place where they can connect with like-minded women in leadership, share their challenges, and just be reassured that they're not on their own. And currently I'm offering membership to the network for free, because I know things are quite tight at the moment. So if you would like to join the network, we would love to have you join us. Email me, vicky@weleadwell.co.uk, and just express your interest and you'll be able to join the network and enjoy all the benefits of that. This episode is sponsored by Schools UK, who provide cover insurance, supply cover insurance, and they've been doing this for 24 years, so they are pretty good at it. And what I love about Schools UK and why I've entered into a sponsorship partnership with them is because they offer, as part of their supply cover insurance, a well-being package, and there are lots of benefits to it. Some of them including, which I think are the main benefits, face-to-face counselling sessions for any of the staff in your school or your organisation. And they can have up to 6 one-to-one face-to-face counselling sessions, not just over the phone, actual face-to-face sessions. There are musculoskeletal services, so that includes things like acupuncture, physiotherapy, and you can access in general 4 to 5 of those sessions. They have an employment assistance programme, which is great. It's a hotline if you having any sort of issues in your life, you and your family can use that. But the main benefit is access to a GP every day. So your staff can just go online in the morning and book an appointment to speak to a GP online on that day, which I think is absolutely brilliant, because a concern that I've got at the moment is that a lot of staff in schools are not seeing GPs, because everybody knows it's absolutely so difficult to get appointments with GPs at your local practice at the moment. And when you can only do that outside school hours, it makes it doubly difficult. And I think people are just not accessing GP services in the way that they would have done previously. And that's a big concern for me. I think it's going to lead to problems in the future. So the wellbeing package that's offered through Schools UK actually gives you access to a GP every day, which I think is absolutely brilliant. And if you would like to get a quote from them, you can visit their website. And if you do buy cover, use the code WeLeadWellPodcast for a 10% discount, which would be probably quite a big saving. So please, you know, have a look at what Schools UK offer. I think they do a great job, and I think the wellbeing package is second to none and would definitely be something that you would be able to make plenty of use of in your school. So today on the show, we welcome Emma Shepherd, who is the founder of Maternity Teacher, Paternity Teacher, who provide support, training, information, awareness of maternity and paternity issues, challenges, leave, all sorts of things to do with maternity and paternity issues. And she talks about trying to create family-friendly or life-friendly schools. Emma shares lots of great information and advice in this interview, so I'm sure that there is lots for you to take from it. So here she is, Emma Shepherd. Emma Shepherd, welcome to the We Lead Well podcast. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Vicky.
You're welcome. I've Just let the listener know that you're out there in beautifully sunny Provence, and we're in, well, I am, and the listeners, mainly in the UK, are in a bit of a cloudy, drizzly day today. And I think we've got a bit of rain in the forecast for the next few days. So everybody's probably jealous of you, although you have said it's slightly hot and you've got no air conditioning. So
it is, and we'd welcome a little bit of rain down here. We're very dry, so you know, grass is always greener, or
isn't it
brown and yellow?
We always want something. We always want something else, don't we? Other than what we've got. Can you just introduce yourself to the listener? You know, give us a bit of a flavour of who you are, what you do, how you've ended up doing what you do now.
Brilliant. Yeah. So my name's Emma Shepherd. I'm the founder of a charity called the Maternity Teacher, Paternity Teacher Project. It's the UK's charity for parent teachers, and we support teachers all the way through from when they're considering starting a family at some point to through the parental leave, return to work period, and as they balance their personal lives and their families with their work and their career progression. We also work with schools to support them to create family-friendly or life-friendly, we term it, working environments. And all that contributes fairly significantly to the teacher retention debate, discussion issues, and gender equality in school leadership in particular, and teacher wellbeing. So we talk about ourselves as the expert in the motherhood penalty in education and the impact that has on our workforce. I myself mum to two small children. Well, they're getting big now. Lucy is 5 and a half and Hugo has just turned 7. And I actually founded the project when I was on leave with Hugo in 2016. And initially we were founded with the idea of empowering, inspiring and connecting teachers who were choosing to complete professional development on leave as a way of keeping their hand in, protecting their mental well-being, remaining a little bit intellectually active whilst on leave, but also as a way of demonstrating that it's not necessarily a disadvantage to have that time out, learning to be a parent, having access to weekday museums, having the time to do reading and trying out with some pedagogical approaches or attending online webinars or listening to podcasts like this. But even becoming a parent, there's a great deal of richness in that experience that can come back into schools and benefit our students. So really trying to reframe what is typically seen as, you know, jumping off a cliff in your career when you become a mother in particular, into a time that can actually be really, really beneficial to your professional learning and your professional impact, particularly in teaching. I'm a former English teacher and lead practitioner. I've worked in Hertfordshire, in South London, and in Vietnam and France, in international schools, grammar schools, schools serving disadvantaged communities. And I'm a Teach First ambassador at Train Through Teach First in 2010. So I hope that gives you a little bit of a bio and package there.
It does, it does. So what was it that made you want to create your charity to support mothers, fathers, or as you call it, that life-friendly approach? What was it that drove you to do it in the first place?
Initially, it was very inward-facing. So my son was 2 weeks late, and I had half-term before that. And I was sort of on maternity leave for 3 weeks before I actually had a baby to enjoy. Newborn babies, lots of enjoyment and lots of challenge as well. So I found that I'd gone from this very high-paced routine, sort of working in a school that served a very challenging community, really loving my job, really feeling, you know, at the top of my game. I love adrenaline, I love structure, I love working under pressure. And then to go from all that to not really knowing what the day was for, or not necessarily having a purpose or a goal in a day, or any way of structuring the day, I found that very, very challenging. I got bored. I was impatient. Yeah. You know, you can't make a baby come when you wanted to come. And a lot of my social circle was at work. friends in teaching and friends in employment. So it was quite lonely to begin with as well, actually. And so I started doing courses with FutureLearn just to give me something to do during the day. I started a blog, and eventually I started a Twitter handle, and then that turned to a website about 4 months after Hugo had arrived. I went to museums, I had coffees with friends working in educational charities, I went and visited the Teach First offices and did a panel event with them. I got connected to Women Ed, and I was blogging about these experiences all the time, because I really had time to reflect on the fact that colleagues I'd potentially been level pegging with up until that point, female colleagues who hadn't had children yet or had chosen not to have children, and male colleagues who, whether they were fathers or didn't have children, they were sort of making strides in their career. And I felt that, you know, this could be a really detrimental moment for me and my ambition. I was very, very ambitious. And I am very solutions focused, and I didn't want to spend maternity leave resenting the fact that I had time out, or in any way, you know, being in conflict with this idea of motherhood. And it is a huge identity shift. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of things that come with motherhood that are amazing and that you want to embrace and you feel so privileged to have. But there's also a lot of things that come with parenthood that, frankly, you would rather do without, or that it takes a long time to adjust to, and that identity isn't necessarily immediately concreted the minute that the baby arrives. So I tried to do something positive with my leave, and the more I blogged about it and the more that I shared, the more I found that there were people in similar situations to me, and that's when we started having coffee mornings and growing the community. And from there it sort of grew organically. But in terms of thinking more big picture, you know, beyond just my own experience, my own mental health, and I did have a tricky first few weeks with my son Hugo, because he was unwell, and my husband had to go back to work very quickly, and I needed something that felt like it was mine and that it was me and that I was in control of, in sort of 2-3-4 weeks of feeling completely at sea, actually, and very overwhelmed by all the things that I had to do as a new mother, and breastfeeding and the sleep deprivation. But it wasn't until Lucy came along, really, where I started to think bigger picture and think, you know, what impact is this having on the wider workforce, gender inequalities that we see at leadership level, progression opportunities for women, and what can we actually start doing about it to concretely improve things?
And I say well done to you for doing that, because when you're talking, it resonates so powerfully with me in terms of my experience. Now, my older son is 21 now, so we're talking back in the early 2000s, and things were very different. But I recognise exactly what you're saying about that. You work in a high-paced environment in a school, so no day is the same, and every day goes by in the blink of an eye, doesn't it? You're going from one thing to the next, and you have a baby, and all of a sudden, what do you do with yourself? I went back to work when my older son was 9 weeks old, and not necessarily out of choice specifically, because the place where I wanted to go back and work were a bit like, well, if you want the job, you'll come back and start at the start of the September half term. And I was like, but I wasn't planning on, you know, coming back from maternity leave till after Christmas. And the head basically said, well, take it or leave it. And I was desperate, so I went. But in a way, when I went back, when he was 9 weeks old, I was sort of relieved, because I didn't know how to be a mum, and I didn't know how to pass the time in the day. And like you're saying, I was a bit bored. I was a bit like, could I do this for 12 months? I don't know. And I feel I didn't have any, like you're saying, my friends were in the school that I worked, or they didn't have children. I was the first out of my friends to have children. They were working. So I was quite isolated. And I recognized that. And I think there was nothing out there for me to, you know, go and find out what things could I do? How could I, you know, keep my brain active? And how could I keep myself busy? with my second son, I was doing a play at the time and I was learning lines. So it was a completely different experience because I was really busy doing that and I was doing the play. But I recognize that it's a big shift, isn't it? It's a big change to go from being so, so busy in a job in a school to not really having to do very much because baby's asleep a lot of the time and you just sort of not really doing much. So I recognize that. How do you communicate with those women? What is it that you do to make them aware that, you know, as an organization, you are here? Or how could, if a head teacher or a senior leader is listening to this and they think, oh, I've got, you know, a few members of staff who are pregnant or on maternity leave, is there a way that they can tell their employees about the work that you're doing and how they can be supported by you?
Absolutely. So the first thing to say is that we've grown enormously since 2016, and we have a lot of people who've come through our coaching programs, through our workshops, through our coffee mornings, through training and inset days that we've done for schools and for unions and for different network groups. So more people know us now, so we do tend to be the first point of call for people, teachers, when they become pregnant or when they're expecting or when they find themselves on leave. Some people find us sort of as they're returning to work or once they're back at work. Word of mouth is our most powerful tool in terms of people saying, oh, I connected with the MTPT project and they were really great for these reasons. But we do a lot of conference and networking events. We have a team, gosh, how big is our volunteer team now? About 40 volunteers and coaches that work for us freelance. So we've sort of got voices in on the ground in schools and in at women ed events and at research ed events, that sort of thing. But we also have a very strong social media presence. We've got about 12,500 followers on Twitter. We've got not as many on Instagram, but we are on Instagram. We use Facebook as a tool as well to share what we're doing, and LinkedIn. And we have our website as well. And we have a fairly decent network of connections with teacher school hub leaders as well, and MAP leaders as well. So we do work in different ways to sort of share through newsletters, through whole school comms, through sort of introduction events. Did an event yesterday, for example, for HR leaders in a big MAP in London. I'm doing an event, just an introduction, 20 minutes to some women leaders up in the north this afternoon. So different ways like that that we spread the word. But I think that the most poignant thing we hear is when somebody comes to us and their children are slightly older and they say, oh, I wish I'd known about you when I was on maternity leave, adoption leave, shared parental leave. Or, you know, when we get fathers in particular who say, gosh, I didn't even know that I could take more than 2 weeks paternity leave. I wish I'd known about shared parental leave when I became a father, because I would have loved to spend some time doing the things that I've seen on your website and networking and sharing in that way. So we do podcasts like this, and we have media and articles and blogs and things that we share on different platforms. Because, yeah, we know that we're needed, we know that we're appreciated, and we know that we're valued, and we know that we have real impact either on an individual level or on a sort of larger school and MAT culture level.
So just going back to something that you said before that I already mentioned, you talk about the making schools more family friendly or life friendly. Mm. This isn't easy in schools, is it? Because of the nature of, you have to be there at a particular time because you've got your form, or that's when the children are arriving, and you have to probably be there until a particular time in the afternoon because that's when you need it until. So what does it mean in a school for it to be more family friendly or life friendly? Can you give us some examples of things that schools are doing or could do to create that more life friendly ethos or culture? Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing to consider there is sort of in the implication of what you were saying, you were talking about flexibility and sort of the working hours that we have as teachers. Flexibility is really part of making life easier, particularly for parents, but for our entire workforce and making our workforce competitive. And the DfE have establish flexible working ambassador schools and mats in order to encourage better practice with flexible working in schools. But also important to know that a lot of people, a lot of teachers in particular, really thrive on structure and routine. And if a employer is family friendly, it can be very possible and engaging and feel very purposeful to work full time in a very structured way, particularly where people like to compartmentalize. So when I'm in school, I am a teacher or a leader. When I'm at home, I am a mother and a wife or a friend, for example. So it can be challenging to create these life-friendly schools, but what's really interesting, Vicky, is there are examples up and down the country of schools just being pragmatic and human and compassionate and understanding and solutions focused. And they are getting on with being fantastic employers very quietly and not necessarily banging the drum in the way that we sometimes see bad practice getting a lot of press. And we know that because a lot of our community members and the research that we did into women aged 30 to 39 who had stayed in teaching and left teaching, the stayers just said, you know, my head is really reasonable. And it's very difficult to quantify sometimes, but that idea of being reasonable, being understanding, giving, because you know that if you give as a school leader or school organization, then your staff will give back threefold. And understanding that your staff are human beings first and employees second. And sort of working on that basis helps school leaders to see their employees, see their staff as human beings first, then balance up the needs of the schools, and then find the compromise or the solution. So a lot of women in our research and our community, they talk about flexibility as well as flexible or part-time working arrangements. So that might be things like, you know, they know that it's a given that if they want to go to their child's sports day, they work full time, they work long hours, but if they do need to go to it, then they'll be granted that opportunity. Things like if they have a very heavy week in terms of extracurricular activities, they'll be offered a day off in lieu at some point, or the opportunity to, stop teaching if they're not teaching at the end of the day, leave site, pick their children up, spend some time with their children, then come back for the drama performance or the parents' evening, whatever that is. It means talking fairly about pay and progression opportunities. So making sure that women have access to those, and mothers in particular, following the law when it comes to pregnancy and maternity and making sure that discrimination isn't happening. But also simple things like having conversations in the staff room. How are your children? How's that going? How are you feeling? And being humane and thinking, having channels of communication where if there are issues that arrive, staff feel safe to communicate those issues and also bring forwards solutions. And I think the places where we see the greatest success, you know, some of them include part-time leaders, some of them include flexible working arrangements, some of them include creches on site, some of them include, you know, full payment of TLRs for part-time middle leaders. But the thing that we see throughout all of that is effective communication between colleagues and between leadership and staff, so that when something arises, colleagues feel safe to say, I need this, or can we explore this, or this isn't working, or this isn't purposeful, and it's preventing me from seeing my friends for cocktails in a week, or keeping fit, or being present for my children. Can we work towards the solution? And if that communication isn't there, then the problems remain and nobody moves forwards.
And that comes down to building relationships as well, doesn't it? As leaders, recognizing that relationships are the most important thing for you to focus on, because unless you've got effective relationships with staff, you won't be able to achieve whatever it is that you want to achieve. One of the things that you mentioned earlier, and I think you've alluded to it in what you were just saying then, is you described something called the motherhood penalty. And I was interested in what that is. Can you tell us what motherhood penalty means?
Absolutely. So it's a phenomenon that exists in all industries in pretty much every single country in the world, even unfortunately in the Scandinavian countries that are held up as sort of really positive examples of parenting policies and parenting in the workplace. But the motherhood penalty is essentially the term coined by an American sociologist called Michelle Budig to describe the disadvantages that mothers face in the workplace that aren't felt by fathers or women without children or men without children. And that could be all sorts of things, anything from the perception that mothers are less committed to their career and therefore they miss out on progression or promotional opportunities because of discriminatory attitudes or perceptions. It's things like the gender pay gap and the fact that that widens significantly after the birth of the first child. And in education, we're not immune to that. So the gender pay gap widens significantly at every single level, age 35 to 39. And thank you to Women Ed and the NHC Governors Association for completing that report for us. It's been really helpful. Well, not for us, for the education sector. Yeah. It's been really helpful in sort of validating some of the things that we've been saying. It can be things like mothers missing out on training and development because they are more likely to work part-time and therefore more likely to miss the day when that training or development happens. It can be things like the limited occupational mobility that we see with mothers in all industries, but also in teaching. And that means essentially mothers are less likely to take roles that require travel or absence or commuting time because they are more likely to take on the domestic responsibilities and therefore more likely to be needed in a sort of restricted geographical location to do the drop-off, to attend to medical appointments, dentist appointments, to do the grocery shopping, that sort of thing. That tends to fall on mothers, and so their professional geographical sphere is limited in a way that men's or fathers or women without children is not. Fathers tend to take promotional opportunities to earn more, to be the breadwinner, further away from the home because they're not as required to be part of that domestic responsibility. So that's the motherhood penalty in all sectors, but exists in education as well.
What do you think the solution is to it? What practical approaches can we take that might help to reduce that for the mothers?
Unfortunately, there's no easy answer, I'm afraid.
I didn't think there would be.
I can skim the surface a little bit. There's definitely stuff that we can do as a sector, and we are female dominated, so it's incredibly ironic that in female dominated industries, even healthcare, social work, there is still a gender pay gap. And the motherhood penalty has a huge deal to do with it. But there's also things that need to happen on a wider social scale, or a wider national and governmental scale, because education and teachers are just one sector that suffers from the same things everybody else is suffering from. So in terms of wider needs, we need more affordable childcare and more accessible childcare, and childcare that matches the hours that teachers are required to teach. So a lot of childcare settings, even if they are affordable, even if they are geographically well located, if they don't open until 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning, or schools, primary schools, if they finish at 3 o'clock and then don't have affordable or available wraparound care, then that is really problematic for teachers. And actually, our leavers research in some instances, the sort of straw that broke the camel's back was the logistic cost and accessibility of childcare arrangements. So teachers didn't want to leave, but they felt they had to because they didn't know what to do with their babies and their children. They didn't have anywhere to put them. Things like better paid and equal parental leave and pay. So moving away from a sort of matriarchal system when we've got maternity pay that is prioritised and maternity leave that's prioritised over shared parental leave or paternity leave to an equal parenting leave where both, there's obviously sort of health and safety reasons that women or birthing mothers need time off in order to heal. There's a certain protected period there, but also moving towards policies that recognize both parents in dual parenting households as equal parents and paying them and giving them the leave to do that equal parenting, because I think especially for my generation, so So I'm 36, sort of grew up being told that I could do anything, be anything, that, you know, being a woman, you know, made no differences to my career aspirations or what I could do.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of teachers are university educated. We are used to being told that we are equal. And so when we realize, when we become mothers, that actually we are not, it is a huge, huge shock to the system.
It causes a significant amount of, I'm going to say, mental health challenges or well-being challenges as well, because it makes you feel like a failure as a woman, because you've been told, I'm 47 and I was told the same thing exactly. Like, I believed I could be anything I wanted to be. I could be a mother. I could have a career at the same time and, you know, do all these wonderful things. And that had a big impact on me when I sort of, the superwoman syndrome. They realize you actually, you can't do all these things and be all these things to for yourself and for everyone, because it's just, it isn't possible without it having a significant impact on your mental health and your well-being. And that's why I was laughing when you were saying it, because I just identify with that so much. And the work that I do with group coaching programs for women leaders, one-to-one coaching for head teachers and women leaders, I am seeing the impact of that message that we were given in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and see the impact of that. And it's huge on women, that they feel like failures. They feel like they're not doing any of the roles that they have undertaken particularly well. And it really isn't helpful at all, is it?
But actually what we see, the research around sort of shared parental leave and equal parental leave demonstrates that when fathers are involved, particularly when they have sole responsibility for the child and there's less of that maternal gatekeeping, sort of, you're doing it wrong, not that way, this is what we do, I'm in charge. Where fathers are involved in the first year of their child's life, they are more likely to share that, the domestic duties essentially for the rest of life, and improves couple relations and all sorts. So if, for example, we were enabling men to financially, and financially incentivizing it, because a lot of men don't take shared parental leave, or non-birthing partners who are the breadwinners don't take shared parental leave because they can't afford to make that salary sacrifice as a family unit. But if we can incentivize that financially so that men are more involved in the first year of their child's life, they're more likely to say, you know, well, what's my responsibility going forwards, rather than, you know, this very quick shift that happens, that it's, you know, the laundry is your job because you're at home, the meal prep is your job because you're at home, the childcare is your job because you're at home, and I'm working full time. So the sleep deprivation is your job. I'll go and sleep on the sofa or in the spare room because I have to work in the morning, and you're just on maternity leave. So those attitudes are far less likely to exist. And then when the woman does go back to work, the partnership is more likely to exist on a more equal footing because of that early involvement from the partner. So taking away the barriers that prevent fathers and non-birthing partners to be involved in that way very early on would be incredibly helpful to everybody, and actually give fathers in particular the freedom to parent in the way that they want to as well, and to have that, the experience that is often denied to them.
Before we hear more from Emma, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our partner, Head Teacher Chat.
Head Teacher Chat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of Head Teacher Chat is to support head teachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of information for schools to tap into. For example, they have lots of fantastic education companies on their database for leaders to discover, as well as leadership templates to download. They've written product reviews for leaders who are looking for products for their school. And this year, they've even launched the very first school leader planner, especially designed to help leaders to be productive and organised. If you'd like to hear more about Head Teacher Chat, you can find them on their website at www.headteacherchat.com. Head Teacher Chat, it's what head teachers are talking about. Now let's get back to the interview. And that sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be brilliant, wouldn't it? But what you're dealing with is entrenched beliefs in society, things that our boys growing up see, the way that they see things happening around them. It's not so straightforward, is it? And there's a lot of work that needs to be done to actually change those beliefs or views about the role of a woman, the role of a man. And it comes right back to education, doesn't it? It comes back to educating young people when they're at school and presenting a different way for them, because they have probably been brought up in a family like we're describing, where the dad's gone back to work, the mum's done the majority of the childcare, the housework, you know, the homemaker role, I suppose you might describe it as. And that's their experience. Mm-hmm. So that's what they then end up, you know, you just end up repeating the pattern, don't you? Mm-hmm. So what do you think needs to be done in terms of education? Because change is slow, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, and while, like you're saying, there is shared parental leave, people don't necessarily know that. Like you're saying, men have said to you, wow, I wish I'd known that. Mm-hmm. So it's awareness, it's accessibility, but it's education as well, isn't it? And mm-hmm. how do you see things changing in that respect?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're right, it's change is a slow process, but it's also important to recognize that change is happening. And even since 2016, when we were founded, to now, we have seen a huge increase in the number of fathers and non-birthing partners and different setups of families that are involved in our conversations and feel included in our conversations and the work that we do. And I mean, even this year, from sort of just tweeting Happy Father's Day a few years ago, we were able to do a social media campaign where we had about 10 dads making videos sharing their top tips for teaching and parenting or leadership and fatherhood or why they took shared parental leave. So there has been a significant shift, and we've seen it as a microcosm in our community. But unfortunately, those fathers remain the exception to the rule. So in terms of education, I think what we've seen is really powerful for both men and women is role modelling. And really sort of shameless role modelling. So from women saying, I'm an executive school leader, I am in charge of however many maths, I took period of maternity leave for this amount of time, or shared parental leave for this amount of time, this is how my partner supports me, or this is how I do it alone. And, you know, really getting into the nuts and bolts of the details of exactly how they do it, so that women have a blueprint of, right, that's the path then. So instead of sort of going into something blind, having a map to say, right, this is the direction that's going to work for me if I want to get to X, or this is, you know, I have the option of going here, there, or everywhere, instead of not really knowing where they're going or how to get there. And if I get stumbled, or if I get lost on the way, I know who to call or where to find some help or what to Google, you know. But in the same way, having similar blueprints and role models for fathers, you know, so if you've got an expectant dad whose partner is in the early stages of pregnancy, or, you know, they've just started the adoption process, a father who has seen somebody else talk about shared parental leave is much more likely to explore that as an option for them, and then have somebody to talk to and say, oh my god, how did you afford this? It's terribly paid. And actually have those brave conversations around, it was really difficult financially, but this was the worthwhile thing for me, and you won't regret it if you take it. If those conversations are happening between peers, then they will provide role models for their sons, for their daughters, to have those transparent conversations as the generations, you know, continue. So I think role modeling and providing access to those role models, and not having any shame around any of the taboos that might surround that, you know. If you're working in a leadership position as a woman, then you're a bad mother, or if you're working full time, then you're a bad mother, or if you're taking time out to look after your child, then you are in some way a wimp as a man, or anything like that. And some of those very negative narratives that we have in the media in particular, that are driven by shame and fear, I think providing a counter to that is really, really powerful.
One of the things that I think when you're talking there that comes up is that for women who want to move up the ladder, so to speak, or, you know, they are driven, they are ambitious, there's often a conflict, isn't there, between wanting to have children and wanting to develop in your career, mm-hmm. and not knowing like when the best time is to. Had a coaching conversation with someone who was really conflicted in, well, do I need to become an assistant head now? Do I need to start applying for assistant head roles now because I've not got a family now and I'm planning to have one in X number of years or whatever it may be? Am I better to be in that role and do that? Or is it better to hold off and have the family and then have the career that I want? There's a lot of conflict around that, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. And I think I'm smiling here because these are conversations that come up again and again and again. But then we also have examples from our community of people that just don't even think. They just do what they feel like doing at that moment, and then they roll with the punches and the successes later. And as quite a neurotic planner person, somebody who likes to think of every single, you know, opportunity, and actually somebody who has quite a strong inner critic and limiting belief set that, you know, we overcome it every day. We talk about it a lot as coaches. It is marvelous to me to come across people that are just like, applied for the promotion and got mm-hmm. it, and then I had a baby, and then my partner stepped in and does half of the drop-offs, and he works 4 days and I work 4 days, and they're like, no biggie, you know, like, what's the issue yeah. here? But I negotiated a higher salary. I just asked, you know, and you're like, oh, you just did it. You just went ahead and did it. You didn't think too much about it, because why not? And I think the more we have those sorts of examples, how refreshing, then the more we can sort of empower people like me who have all the barriers. And I don't think those barriers are invented or unrealistic. I might talk about that in a second. But I think the more we have examples of, you know, I have a great colleague called Madeline Fresco Brown. I'll give her a shout out. She's one of our trustees. She's incredibly good at just being like, well, just do this, and you're like, oh yeah, okay, I'll just do that, okay. And Cleo de Jong, who's like, you know, why didn't you just?
She's been on the podcast. Yes.
You know, why don't you just ask your partner to help or do that, because that's his job, isn't it? You know, and so you say, yeah, it is actually. You're right. But I think the reality of things is that we have systems that discriminate against women in this country. That they protect employers and organizations to a certain extent, and I understand that because my husband runs his own business, and we've designed his maternity policies together actually to strike a balance between fair and what the company can actually afford. Yeah. But one of the things that limits women's occupational mobility in the way that you described with your coaching client is the qualifying periods and the clawback periods for maternity pay. In particular, so you have to work with an employer for X amount of time in teaching, it's a year and 11 weeks before the baby arrives, in order to qualify for the enhanced maternity pay that we get in according to the Burgundy book. And then you have to return to work for the equivalent of 13 weeks full time in order to avoid paying back that maternity pay, that enhanced maternity pay. And that clawback period following the leave is at the discretion of the organisation, the employer, but a lot of employers' schools don't realise that they can waive that, or they don't want to because they feel like they need budget-wise, or they need to get their money's worth out of somebody, or they can't recruit without sort of holding this person hostage with them, essentially, in order to get this pay. But obviously women without children or men don't have to think about those qualifying periods. And if you think about the actual impact of that, for somebody who is considering starting a family in a middle leadership position, they might not go for a promoted position in a different school or a different local authority or a different MAT, because they know that they have to have this qualifying time period. So they need to stay put for now whilst they're starting to have a family. But if they don't conceive for a year and a half, maybe they have to go to fertility treatment, and maybe they've been stuck in their middle leadership position for 3 years, when had they not had that restriction or that qualifying period, they would have moved 3 years ago. Then you imagine they've got their year of, they're 9 months pregnant, they've got a year of being on leave, potentially, and then 2 terms of being back at work, or a term of being back at work as a minimum. But then they think, I want to have a second baby. So I need to stay here, otherwise I'm not going to qualify for maternity pay, the enhanced maternity pay, if I move somewhere else, or I need to stay within this trust, or I need to stay within this local authority. So I can't relocate, or I can't take this promotion that's outside of my local authority or outside of my trust. And so then you're talking 5, 6, 7 years remaining in the same role, because they don't want to take the financial hit of losing out on that enhanced maternity pay, or having to pay back their enhanced maternity pay as a clawback period. And just imagine the progression that you could make in 5, 3, 5, 7 years.
And that contributes to the gender pay gap then as well, doesn't it?
Hugely. And what we see actually is within our membership base, the figures that we've got, and within some of the indications of the research that we did, is this middle leadership ceiling for mothers, in that they don't, maybe they're happy to stay in that middle leadership position, but they are less likely to move into senior leadership positions if they have the child before they do that. So actually, my recommendation is always forget the short term. If it's the right job in the right school for you, take the short term financial hit in order to A, be paid better in the long run, to continue your career progression, and to move into an environment that you feel that you will be happier and more fulfilled in. Because if you are happy and fulfilled, then whatever baby comes along is happy and fulfilled. And the sad fact is that maybe the baby won't come along, and then you will sit there resenting the fact that you paused your career for a family that didn't happen, or didn't happen as quickly as you wanted, or in the way that you wanted. Babies slot in. You know, astronauts have babies, military have babies, jungle explorers have babies, people who work on petrol rigs have babies. So a baby will slot into the life that you create, but it's important that the life that you create is the life that you want that baby to come into. But even on a really short-term sort of question, if you go for the promotion first and are there long enough to get the enhanced maternity pay, you're going to be paid a maternity pay at a rate of the increased rate of the senior leadership positions.
And I think some women have said to me, you know, I there could be a head teacher, but I'm not going to be a head teacher because I'm probably going to have another baby. Mm. And I think I always try to ask the question, like, well, what difference would the baby make? You know, it's a job, like you're saying. Astronauts have babies. People who are doing really important scientific research into like cancer cures, they have babies. They take time out. It's a really
Venus Williams has a baby. You know,
yeah,
she had a very challenging labor, but Beyonce has a baby. Barack Obama has a baby. You know.
I think I'm like some of the people you describe. I just did it. I was much younger. I was 26 when I had my first and 30 when I had my second. So I think I was a bit more, not naive, but I think I was less thoughtful about things. I think I was much younger and I just went, yeah, this is fine. I'm going to do it. I'll be ahead of English and I'll take a break and whatever. And I just got on with it. I didn't really think too much about it. But also I roll with the punches. I can cope with a lot of change. I'm not an analytical thinker. I don't, you know, like you talk about yourself as being someone who's looking at all the different possible, what could all the outcomes be? And I need to make sure
I'm always prepared.
Yes. Whereas my approach means that I end up in the shit sometimes because I'm like, oh God, I didn't really think about that. But I keep saying on the podcast, I've been referred for diagnosis assessment for ADHD. So I'm much more of a just get on with it and just do it and don't really think about it. But it depends a lot on personality as well, doesn't it? Like your personality and the approach that you take, it can be limiting if you've got that type of personality where you are a planner. You do think about all the risks and all the potential barriers. Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned barriers, didn't you? Because they are things like if you think a certain way or you are a certain way,
those barriers can then prevent you from doing what it is you really want to do.
And as I said, those barriers are not, I don't think they are unrealistic, but I think there are solutions, and what we do at the MTPT project is demonstrate what those solutions could look like at different contexts. So obviously one thing that is a concern for employers when they are, when somebody becomes pregnant or decides to take a period of a shared parental leave or adoption leave in their organisation is a period of absence that will represent. And, you know, for some schools, depending on their context, it is challenging for them to absorb that period of absence, particularly from an experienced, strong member of staff or senior leader. So you can understand from the school's perspective, from the employer's perspective, what might make that challenging for them. But actually, you know, just in the way that people become sick, people take long-term sickness, we recruit every year, we send people out on CPD every year, becoming a parent and the absence that comes with that is not a new phenomenon for employees. That's why we have so much policy around it, and those systems should be in place really to deal with that. And you know, unless somebody is a very fresh leader, or unless they have always worked in very sort of schools with very young staff bases, you announcing your expectancy is probably not the first time they've had somebody share their expectancy with them, and they have an HR and policy documents to follow a procedure. I think the challenges arise when leaders are so stressed or inexperienced they can't see beyond the end of the day, and therefore they can't have the sort of calm response of, yeah, this is par for the course, this is what being a leader of a large organization that employs human beings instead of robots is all about. This is, we have systems in place to manage this, just like we have systems in place for cover, we have systems in place for absence, we have systems in place for a fire drill, we have systems in place for you know, now we have systems in place for national lockdown. So
I think this comes down, doesn't it, though, to schools like having an actual recruitment, retention, staffing, like a plan for it. So one of the things I was looking at with a head teacher I was working with yesterday was the talent management model of, you know, you plan for your recruitment. So you, as a head teacher, like you're saying, a lot of leaders get caught up in that day to day, don't look past the end of the day or the week or the half term. But you need to have meetings where you sit down and say, what does staffing look like next year? Potentially, like, where do we see, like, how many maternity covers might we have to have, and what are we going to do about that, so that you start planning for it in advance, and it's part of the bigger picture of your strategy for recruitment and retention. Because like you're saying, well, the majority of the workforce is female, so it's inevitable you are going to have to cover maternity leave. But what I find in a lot of schools is they wait until the moment someone says, oh, by the way, I'm pregnant, okay, right, and then they leave things right, you know, you've got, from the moment someone says they're pregnant, they're probably, what, let's say on average 4 months pregnant, so you've got 4 months to plan for that. And I find what you find is a school will wait until the very last minute, and then they're like, right, well, we need to cover this maternity. Actually, it's a step back. You've got 4 months, but it's a step back from that and thinking, right, we're potentially going to have maternity covers. So building relationships with supply agencies or whatever it is you're doing.
And it's direct trainees.
Yeah, and it's part of your recruitment. It's part of like your risk management plan as a school anyway. Like that we might have staff vacancies coming up in the year. What do we do about that? So it's a much broader picture, isn't it, of actually being prepared for it and planning for it and knowing that when that does happen, you've got something in place, and you're not just going to be like, oh, we've got maternity cover to fill, how do we do it?
I think it's about not just putting that on the agenda for school leaders, but actually the more challenging question is, how do we find that time for them. And then obviously both of us are coaches and coaching for the MTPG project and school leaders through the associate coaching work. But that coaching is so powerful for blocking in a space of time for thinking, because actually some of that strategic planning doesn't take a very long time, but it does need protected time free from interruption, where you know the leader's brain can be cleared of all the other pressures and stresses and questions of the day or the month or the term, and focus solely on one project or one question. But I think I'd even go further than that. So it's not just necessarily the coming up again academic year and what staffing is for that. It's a 3-year plan, it's a 5-year plan, it's a 10-year plan. Because if, as a leader, if you know that you're not necessarily going anywhere, or maybe even if you do know that you have the, you know, you intend to go somewhere, you need to succession plan for that to secure the stability of the school.
Is it acceptable for a head teacher to ask, like, the question, like, legally, is it acceptable for a head teacher to ask a female member of staff whether they're planning on having a family?
No.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Like,
that's a very easy answer.
So you can't ask.
But then it's what you said, it's that risk management. It's preparing for what could happen so that you have a plan, you know, and can calmly go, oh, right, okay, yeah, we were partly anticipating that. Here's what we've put in place. But also then being able to say, okay, well, that didn't happen. So we've actually got reserves here, or you know, we have surplus in a certain area that we can do other things with. So we're working from a place of sort of wealth rather than lack or insufficiency. I have a colleague who works in healthcare machines, and she's in charge of budgeting for her department, very big international department, for the following year. And she's noticed essentially that, you know, 20 or 40% of her staff base are women in their late 20s, early 30s. And she's not having a conversation with them about whether they're going to go on leave or whether they're trying for a family, but she has budgeted into her departmental budget X number of maternity leaves and X number of maternity coachings for the following year. And if that's used, then that's what it's there for. If it's not used, then that will roll over into the following year as a budget, or that will be a budget surplus.
It comes down to having contingencies, doesn't it?
That you
have the money there ready as a contingency.
But also just a watch for us as well, Vicky. We've fallen back into talking about women and mothers.
I know, yeah.
Why are we not suggesting that leaders budget for the male members of staff in their late 20s, early 30s, who may also want to take an extended period of adoption or shared parental leave at some point in the coming year, 3 years, 5 years?
And that's the danger, isn't it? That we're conditioned to, like, we are both quite forward thinking. You know, we recognise that it's really important for men to be involved in caring for children, looking after and take that role, and yet we do very easily slip back into the way we've been conditioned, which is to think of it as a mother thing. That was one of the things I was going to say. We're gonna have to wrap things up, and we're thinking we haven't really given enough focus to the paternity, to the fathers in this conversation, I don't think. So will you join us again to talk about that? I think we could do another episode where we really look at,
and again,
not necessarily paternity.
Well, I wonder,
not necessarily paternity, actually, because you know, if you're part of a lesbian couple, you know, it's equal parenting, isn't it? It's how you can get the balance between equal parenting, and there are lots of different families, and there are lots of different family structures. There's adoption, you know, there's all sorts of different permutations of this, aren't there? And it's not just paternity, is it? It's much broader than that.
And that's something that we explore very much in our book, is the idea of these gendered terms to describe parenting, and the idea that they're fairly outdated. We have colleagues who contributed to the book who were in same-sex couples, women saying, yeah, I took paternity leave, but I'm not paternal, I'm a mum. And adoption leave, becoming a parent through surrogacy, and the terms, you know, when dads, fathers were included in policy documents for antenatal appointments, but they're saying I'm not a father, or you know, we're not necessarily going to an antenatal appointment, we're going to an appointment to support our surrogate who's having the antenatal appointment. So interesting things around gender, but I think my invitation would be to introduce you to some of the fathers and the same-sex couples within our community to have that conversation from a place of lived experience, rather than me as a mother who took maternity leave, trying to talk big picture about that without actually having any first-hand experience of it, even though I know the stats, but I haven't done it myself.
That would be great, and that would be a challenge for me because I don't edit the podcast. I'm not that talented. Just record it and then cut and copy it into, and to do some separate interviews, and that'd be quite challenging for me, but it might be good, it might be a learning experience. But I think that would be great to actually talk to people, if you've got people who would be prepared to chat to me, that would be amazing. Emma, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. There's so much more that I wanted to ask you, but I just haven't had time. But I think there's lots there for people to take, and to, there are probably things that they didn't know, things that they'd not thought about and considered, and things that probably people listening didn't even know about maternity leave that you've said. So it's been brilliant. Thank you so much. If people want to find out more about the work you do, access the resources that you've talked about, or if they want to get in touch with you to find out how they can be supported, how do they go about that? I'll put it in the show notes as well, but if you just give us an overview of different ways that they can communicate with you or find out more.
First place to start is our website, and that's www.mtpt, so Mike Tango Papa Tango.
Now, you see, I'm really glad that you've said that, because my son calls me a boomer when I say my website is www.wheeliedwell.co.uk. He's like, "Mummy, you're such a boomer, you don't need the W." So you're much younger than me, so I'm glad it's not just me. So is it .co.uk, did you say?
mtpt.org.uk. We're very active on Twitter at MTPT Project, Mike Tango Papa Tango. It's a bit of a tongue twister. MTPT Project. And we can be reached on email directly at mtptproject@gmail.com. We also have our events. They are listed on Eventbrite. I wonder if the easiest way to search those through my name, Emma Shepherd, Sheppard, because I think they're listed under my name rather than the MTPT Project. But that's where we list all our workshops, all our online workshops, all our live sessions, and our group coaching sessions as well. And we'd love to hear from people. We're very happy to have conversations and to see what we can do to help.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks for having me.
I want to say a massive thank you to Emma for taking the time to talk to us today. I know that she is very busy doing the work that she is doing, so for her to take time out of her busy schedule, yeah, we're very, very grateful for that.
So if you would like to find out about any of the work that I do, or how I could help you in your school through one-to-one coaching, team coaching, or the Women Lead Well group coaching programme, or the Women Lead Well Network, you just need to email me. It's vicky@weleadwell.co.uk, and I will get back to you and we can have a chat about how I can help you. Or you can find out information and contact me via the website, which is weleadwell.co.uk. Don't forget that you can also get a 10% discount on your supply cover insurance through Schools UK, and that's using the discount code WeLeadWellPodcast, and that's a 10% discount, so it is quite a significant discount. So hopefully you can use that and get access to their wellbeing package for all of your staff. That's all we've got time for today. I hope you're enjoying the summer holidays. Whatever you're going to do in the rest of the summer holidays, have fun, but make sure you get some time to relax and recuperate and spend some time focusing on yourself, so that when you go back to school in September, you are ready, refreshed, and raring to go in the new school year. So I will speak to you next time. Take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast was brought to you in partnership with Progressive Masculinity and headteacherchat.com.